And I am now recording.
Cool. We are too.
Me too. Or me three.
Awesome. Welcome everyone to episode 44 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher of Tear. And this week, my virtual right chair is not vacant, but it is taken by a friend of the show and all around awesome person who we greatly respect and are happy to have back with us. Shreve Jackson, if you want to say hello.
Hey, everybody. Sorry that David is not here, but I hope to live up to the legacy of David.
The legacy?
Yeah.
It's not gone.
Legacy.
And I'm very, very pleased to say that we have two of the devs from the We Are Chicago game. Makes me happy because they're local to me and not that far from Sharif to talk about their game that's coming out soon, you know, the process of developing it and other other questions that we got and a few listener questions as always.
Cool. Sure. I'm Michael Block. I'm kind of the project manager and programmer on the team.
And I am Cindy Miller. I am the designer on the team.
Yay. I'm very glad we finally got it together and got y'all here.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us. Yeah, we're super excited.
No problem. For those of you listening, you know that we are part of the Geek.fm network, along with Geeks and Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits podcasts. We have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks, who designed our logo and header. There's a blog to compliment the show, which is outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, if you have guest suggestions, would like to be a guest, please email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. And like everyone else, we're on Twitter. So please follow us there at Out of Tokens Cast. And with all of that out of the way, other than our music, because I'm a terrible person this week and almost forgot it, our musical accompaniment for our episodes is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And please give some love to our musical accompaniment. And with all of that finally really out of the way, let's jump into our questions. Sharif, since you are our guest co-host this week, do you want to start us off?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so the first question is like just a basic one. Just like tell us a little bit about you, who you are, and what you do. So I guess we can start with Michael with that one.
Cool, awesome. Yeah, so I guess my background, I've been working in games for a little while now. I've worked at a kind of like mid-sized studio. I did a lot of mobile games and did some contract work. I actually got to work on Gears of War
nice.
At some points. That was a lot of fun.
Sweet.
So I've been doing that for a while and recently went indie. Well, not that recently anymore. It's been a couple of years. I've been indie for a little while doing that full time. Kind of got really fortunate with a previous game that I worked on called Oregon Trail, which is zombie Oregon Trail. Yeah. So that game has sold really well, and it's done really well for us. It's kind of given me the opportunity to do things that are a little bit more experimental and a little bit crazier and see what I can do with the skills that I have to, for me personally, make the world, you know, a little bit better, hopefully, and try to do something really cool with games that most people aren't trying, because it's kind of this space. We Are Chicago is kind of in this space of games that are very expensive to make and very risky in a field that's already very risky. A lot of people don't want to take that chance, but because of the position that I'm in, it's kind of been a really awesome opportunity to work on stuff that don't normally get to work on. So
cool. Yeah, I bought Oregon Trail during a Steam sale. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but one thing that I was surprised by was like the soundtrack was really good, so I ended up buying the soundtrack.
Yeah.
So it's in my gaming soundtrack playlist.
Nice. Very cool.
It's awesome. Yeah. So let us throw the next part of the question to Cindy to tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you do.
Hi, Cindy. I've been making games for about 6 years now. My last job was at Disney Interactive at a studio here in Chicago called Wide Load, and I got to make console games, and I actually got to work on Disney Infinity.
Nice.
With another studio. It was really cool, really awesome, and then I had some experience making mobile games. And then from there, I kind of wanted to do something that was a bit more, I don't know what's a good word for it. I wanted to do something different. We were kind of going in the direction of free-to-play games, and I wasn't really into that. I felt like free-to-play games maybe wasn't like really the kind of game I wanted to be making, and I kind of wanted to make something that could, you know, change the world.
Yeah.
A good way to say it. I wanted to get into games that would have an impact on people and maybe improve people's lives for the better, maybe give people other points of view, and We Are Chicago was a really, really good project to get onboarded to.
Cool. Now, a lot of people play games, but I was wondering what kind of games you like to play when you're not making them.
So I kind of have a thing for like story-driven games. If you notice, all the games that I put down that I've played recently are all kind of narrative-driven story games. So stuff like, I mean, I was really into like the Mass Effect games, and I've been playing Life is Strange and That Dragon Cancer and that kind of stuff. And those games, I think, are really a lot of fun for me because they're like an interesting way to kind of see how someone else understands the world and kind of go through like their thought process and how they make a character and what they decide to talk about and how they decide to present it. And so that's kind of a game that, you know, is really near and dear to my heart and one of the reasons why I wanted to make We Are Chicago the way that we did, because it kind of gives you this perspective on both the person that the person decided to create, you know, the developer decided to create, but also kind of the developer's ideas about how to present that person and what choices to make about, you know, how they're presented and what choices they're given in the game and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Nice. So what about you, Cindy?
It's such a hard question. I really, really think that games have this huge capacity to, you know, make people feel things, give people like more information about things, and to even just like live out stuff that they never would have normally. And I really like the idea that like as a creator, you can create something and give it to somebody, and they might not, you know, feel the same way you felt when you played it because they have a different life experience. And so I really like that idea of being able to, you know, communicate with people via games.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that it's kind of difficult to balance like making and playing games? Like, is that like a big challenge?
Definitely. I mean, like, there's always like, you're like, oh man, I'm making, you know, I'm working on We Are Chicago and we've been working on it for years. And you're like, okay, well, it's my day job. And, you know, I work on it a lot. And as being an indie, you're not quite working on it 9 to 5. You're more working on it like 9 to 9. And so you're like, when can I play the newest Dragon Age that came out? Because, you know, I want to play that. But when do you find time? You basically had to, you know, be like, oh, it's the weekend. Maybe I can take some hours and then play Dragon Age, and a few hours turns into more than a few hours. And then, you know, you try to limit yourself as much as possible. But yeah, it's kind of hard to be able to keep up with all the games that are coming out that you want to play and then continuing to, like, you know, work on your own game.
Okay, cool. So both you guys were at GDC this year at the Big Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. How was that experience? Did it line up with your expectations? Did you get what you want out of the conference? Like, I'm really curious to like hear about how your GDC experience was. And I'll start with Cindy this time. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, GDC was amazing. It was the first time I actually exhibited a game at GDC. I've been going to GDC as an attendee for a while now. But it was really amazing to be able to show people our game. And it wasn't even just showing gamers our game, it was showing other developers. And I got quite a lot of people being like, hey, this is like a really cool idea. I really like this. And I even had a couple of people come up saying like, oh, I want to do this kind of a game, but with this topic or that topic. And I'm like, that's really cool. You should totally do it. And it sounds like a lot of people had like the same issues. Like, they're not quite sure how they'd go about it or how to make it authentic or how to, like, you know, start on a project like this. And so the idea that, you know, we're there talking to people and getting other people ideas of how they can go about it making these games themselves was really cool. So that was probably like the thing that I took away from GDC the most, other than, you know, enjoying everybody enjoying our game. But yeah, it wasn't something I was expecting, but it was a really cool result.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been going for a number of years now, and every time I go, I have like a totally different experience. I try like a different thing. So there's a bunch of different tracks, right? So like as a programmer, my first couple of years, I went to all the programming talks, and that was interesting. And then I started going to like narrative talks, which I found even more interesting because they were outside of my field and they kind of like expanded what I was thinking about while I was there. And then in the past couple of years, we've had like some really great opportunities to actually meet with like really famous, awesome indie developers. And they just would give us a 20-minute block of time to like come and play our game or to give us feedback on something. And that kind of experience is just amazing. Like to have these people that you're looking up to and admiring for the way that they've kind of perfected their craft, right? And that they would come and talk to you and share their experiences with you is so awesome. And I think that's the kind of big draw for me right now for GDC, being able to talk to these people that seem like the pinnacle of the artists in the genre that you're working in, and to seem like, hey, I can actually talk to them and have a conversation about, you know, something that we both are trying to work on and trying to be really great at. I think it's a really cool experience.
Cool.
Speaking of experiences and things like that, let's jump right into talking about the game.
Cool, yeah.
So the description you have is that it's a narrative game about living on the South Side of Chicago. And I'm a South Side resident, grew up on the South Side. So it piqued my interest.
Yeah.
However, the description says the harsh realities, quote unquote, of living there.
Sure.
On the one hand, I grew up on the South Side. I know it is not a cakewalk. On the other, harsh reality kind of didn't sit right with me. So I was wondering, of the dev team, did any of you grow up on the South Side or, you know, experience anything like what you're trying to depict in the game?
Right. Yeah. So we made an effort, kind of give a little bit of a backstory here. We made a really strong effort at the beginning of the project to kind of do a lot of outreach to people and try to figure out what were the topics that we should be discussing and how we should be like kind of focusing this story. And so we did interviews with people and things like that to kind of figure out what the topics were going to be for the game, what the major points were going to be. And then we worked with, I went and talked to a couple of schools on the South Side, colleges, to find out if somebody who was in like a, you know, English class or like a creative writing class had any interest in working on a game. And we found our writer through that process, and he's a resident of Englewood, and he's been working with us to kind of take the interviews and the experiences that we kind of gathered early on in the development process and make them into this overarching narrative and craft the dialogue and kind of make sure that everything matched up. So he's one of the people from the team that's from the South Side. And we also have Michael Tisdale, who's been giving us a lot of feedback on stuff. And he's also an environmental artist on the project. And so we've been doing that. And we've also partnered with nonprofit groups that are working on the South Side. And through that, we've been able to kind of get feedback from the kids that they work with. And we're going to be doing play tests with them soon on like the kind of completed version of the game to make sure that the experiences that we're depicting are realistic and representative and not, you know, stereotyping or tropey or too Hollywood or anything like that. And yeah, so I think the description that you're mentioning, the harsh realities thing, it's been a struggle for us for sure, to kind of try to find a good balance between making the game sound interesting and dramatic and things of that nature with not trying to kind of perpetuate the stereotypes that we're hoping to combat with the game itself, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of it has gone through, you know, tons and tons and tons of iterations on the marketing language that we're using and the website and all of that. And so it's just been kind of trying to get as much opinion on it as possible. So it's good to hear that, you know, we want the feedback. So it's good to know that that's something that's concerning to you, because it helps us kind of direct that more. But yeah, I mean, I think the point to that line was to talk about, you know, there are things that are happening in these neighborhoods that aren't the greatest, right? And that's what we're trying to talk about. We're trying to have that discussion, but at the same time, another key part of the game is to bring up the positive things that people are experiencing. We talked to a lot of people that were like involved in poetry slams and things like that. And that was kind of a point that people brought up a lot about having this opportunity to be very like proud of something that they had done, you know, as a high schooler or as a middle schooler, to be able to like participate in something, do something very creative and be able to express how you're feeling about your life and your neighborhood and the kind of circumstances that you're finding yourself in, and feeling very accomplished in doing that. And so we made sure to feature that in the game and to talk about that and to talk about that experience and kind of talk about this positive experience in the context of the situation and show that, you know, it's not all terrible, terrible, awful things that are happening. There's lots of positive experiences that people have as well. And to not, you know, hopefully not show it as just this kind of negative stereotyping of the neighborhood and the people that live there.
Very cool, because I actually pulled up a recent interview you all did with Urbanology Mag.
Yeah.
And Tony Thornton is the Englewood resident that you worked with.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me feel a lot better, because, you know, a lot of times when you hear about games, you get what's been cherry-picked for the media and kind of for clickbait. And
right.
And it's too easy to get a flash in the pan, or not even flash in the pan, a flash of what the game is about, but you don't know until A, you play it, and B, you get a chance to look deeper into it. Because I think upon hearing about the game at first, it was too easy to go, well, here's a couple of white folks making a game about the South Side of Chicago. What is this about?
Right.
You know, and Sharif lives, you know, in Wisconsin. I'm in Chicago along with you all.
Yeah.
And, you
yeah.
know, we both talk about diversity, things like that. So it's refreshing to hear that, and good that you've reached out to the community as well. Because as we know, a lot of times people make games, they don't do the research, they don't do the work.
Right.
And then we get things like, you know, MedPack motherfucker.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think going back to the GDC question too, last year, I gave a talk this year, and in my talk, I kind of mentioned this, but last year I went to a bunch of roundtables actually on diversity in games, both like the content in games and the creation side. And kind of a consistent theme through all the discussions was like, hey, you know, we want more diversity in games. So just because you're a straight white dude, like, don't shy away from including people of diverse backgrounds and with diverse experiences. But make sure that you're doing it right. You know, like, do the research, talk to people, bring people on your team if you can. You know, like, all that kind of stuff is what you need to do to, like, do this properly. Thankfully, we have been doing that since we started working on this project. It was good to get confirmation about that. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of this is just, like, we're working on it. We're trying to include as many people as we can to get a lot of feedback as early and often as we possibly can. And then, you know, hopefully we're responding, you know, in the best way that we can to make sure that all the concerns that people are voicing are properly being, you know, responded to, and anything that we have in the game that needs to be fixed gets fixed. So
right, I think that's definitely great that, like, you used resources such as Tony Thornton and some other stuff to, like, really make sure that, like, things were authentic. My question is, you know, one thing I love about We Are Chicago and just about, you know, stories in general is that, like, regardless of what the race or the gender or the social class, we're all people, right? Like, there's all sort of, like, common universal things that we go through. So are there any sort of personal things that you took either from your lives or from people you personally know that you were either inspired something in the story or, like, maybe even something that, like, you were able to, like, sort of have a more direct effect in the work that, like, you did on We Are Chicago?
From our personal lives or from the people? Like, because when we talked to people and did the interviews and stuff, a lot of their stories, I mean, the specific event may not be the exact same thing happened to everyone that we interviewed, but in a lot of situations, you know, everyone expressed that they either had something happen to them directly or they knew somebody who had this particular type of event happen to them, like getting held up on the street or getting mugged on the street and things like that. So, like, we took a lot of those stories that people had told to us and use those as the kind of foundation for the game. So a lot of the events are very personal stories. For us, it was not so much pulling from our personal experiences, right? It was more from the kind of research that we had done and the interviews that we had done with other people.
Yeah. One of the, I think, the cool things that you mentioned just now was bringing, like, the human side to these stories.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the ways we did this in We Are Chicago is we have you doing some more maybe mundane tasks is the term for it, where, like, you know, you're helping your mom set the table. And as most you know, people who may have grown up with a mother and they're trying to help her, like, you might have set the table for your mom at some point. So it's kind of like one of those things that, you know, we feel like people could relate to. We also have you, you know, at work, working and having to deal with, like, how boring work is, especially when you're in, you know, not a very fun job. And in the player's case, you're at, like, an eatery and you're dishing up orders and stuff like that. So, like, we try to bring these more human elements into the game to make you, you know, feel like this could have been your life. This could be, this is people's lives, like, bringing that more human element into things.
Yeah, and giving you an ability to, like, really relate, you know, and make it really clear, like, hey, you have parents, you have potentially siblings, right? And to get you in this position where you can say, like, oh, well, that could be my sister, could be my mother, and these experiences that are happening to them could easily be the experiences that are happening to me or would have happened if I was in a different situation. So, yeah. Does that answer the question? Sorry if
I went off on a tangent.
Okay.
it definitely does.
Cool.
Thank you for answering. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
One thing I was thinking about is, have you gotten feedback from people in the community, specifically Black gamers who may have either seen a demo, folks who may have seen it at GDC, or even just saw press about the game? And, you know, is there active change you've made to the game, to the narrative, to things you're doing in response to that feedback?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've demoed it now at PAX Prime and at Indie PopCon, which is in Indianapolis, so it's not too far away.
As well as GDC.
And GDC, yeah. And Indianapolis, the Indie PopCon event, was actually really great for us because it's close enough to Chicago that we got a lot of people from Chicago, and actually a lot of people from the south side of Chicago, that stopped by the booth. And it was really great to kind of get their feedback. A lot of it, because it's, you know, gamers, a lot of their feedback is kind of vague in general. So a lot of it was just, like, general positiveness and not a whole lot of, like, specific kind of criticisms or concerns.
We had a lot of people who came to the booth and played the game and were like, oh, sweet. So where else can I go in the world? Can I travel to this street?
Yeah.
Can I go to this place? And you're like... You know,
yeah, we're not quite open world, sorry.
Not quite open world. Might need a few more team members for that.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Yeah, people were, like, really excited about the way we portrayed the stuff in-game. So, like, the environments, they said, like, felt, like, real to them. And it's probably a really big thanks to Michael Tisdale because he's one of their more prominent 3D artists. And that's, you know, he's lived in that area and has done a really great job with the 3D art.
Yeah, one of the things that did get brought up was when we were writing the dialogue, it was kind of being written like it was a book. And so, I mean, not like... It was written like game dialogue, but the way that everything was spelled out and written was kind of trying to visually show the vernacular, right? And one of the comments that we got from some people was like, hey... There's actually, like, approved ways of, like, how you should write African-American vernacular English when you're doing subtitles. And it's different than if you were going to write a book or quote something in, like, a newspaper or something like that. Because of, you know, if you're trying to get across through the book, this person is speaking with this particular, like, vernacular English, that's a different way of writing than if you're subtitling something that's spoken. And so that was one of the things that we ended up changing was kind of the presentation of the subtitles. So now the subtitles are written in the way that is, it's actually just, you know, I did a whole bunch of research on this. It's been kind of like a fascinating, interesting little tangent. But it's kind of just talking about like, hey, if you listen to African-American vernacular English, the pronunciation is just different. Like that's the trick. It's not just a completely different thing. It's mostly a pronunciation difference. There's some vocabulary differences, obviously, but it's mostly a pronunciation difference. And so in effect, you don't really change the spelling on a lot of words, even though most people would write them with a different spelling. And so originally we had kind of written it in that different spelling form, and we've since revised our subtitles to be written in normal spelling, totally ordinary spelling, but because they're being voiced, you know, we can kind of still have that explanation that, yeah, this is how people speak, but it's just a different way of pronouncing the same words, and that it's not, you know... there's a lot of discussion about, like, oh, is African American vernacular English like some, you know, lesser form of English? And it's like, no, it's kind of the same thing if you think about American English and British English, right? Like, the British might think that American English is lesser English, but it's the same words in most situations, even with the same spellings. It's just a different way of pronouncing those words. So I think it was really good to kind of get that feedback and to be able to act on it. So.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you guys made that change, because I can say that was one of my big worries before I played the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that I would be sort of distracted and not really immersed into the story because I would see these, like, sort of really weirdly spelled right. words.
Right, yeah.
And I think part of that comes from the fact that, you know, like, I didn't know you guys personally, but I knew that, you know, that, like, you sort of weren't, you know, in that sort of African-American group that would be speaking that way. So, right. I was definitely worried, like, oh man, this is going to be really weird. But I do think that I wasn't, like, distracted. So I do think that it was a great decision to make the subtitles the way that you described, because when cool. you actually hear the people talk, you know, it's like familiar sounding to me because I grew up in, like, a Black family. And, you know, yeah, it is communication. Like, it is English. So, like, I am glad that you made that choice. So, in addition to that language, what are some other challenges you found with, like, trying to communicate this, you know, African American South Side of Chicago based story without the personal experience? And are there any of those challenges that you didn't anticipate that, like, came up during the development of the game?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so one of the big things that we kind of were trying to work out early on with our writer was there's a scene in the game where you're sitting down, and this is, I think, in the demo, so it would have been something that you played through, so maybe you can give us some feedback on it as well. But so when you sit down at the dinner table and you've kind of had this sort of ordinary everyday experience of you're setting the table and everybody's preparing dinner and you go to sit down and a gunshot rings out down the street.
Yep.
And when we were originally kind of talking about how to present this, you know, I think for myself, if a gunshot went off down the street from my house, when I was growing up especially, but even here in Chicago, I would be like, whoa, what just happened? And probably try to figure out, you know, where it is and maybe call the cops and, you know, do all that kind of stuff, right? And so that was kind of my expectation going into it, right? Was that that's how this is going to go. Like, the gunshot goes off, everybody's going to freak out and, like, hide and call the cops and, like, all this stuff. And when we were kind of talking to the writer, he was like, well, that's not really how this would go. He's like, everybody here in this particular neighborhood, you know, gunshots are a fairly common thing. And if it doesn't sound like it's close to the house, if it didn't hit the house, if you don't hear more than one shot, you just kind of ignore it. It happens. And you just kind of go on with your day. And that was, like, really shocking to me. And the part that was kind of difficult after that was like, okay, so that's what would happen if we were just, like, you know, videotaping a documentary of somebody living there, right? But how do we present that in a game? Because if you're having this very dramatic event happen, but nobody responds, that feels like the game's broken, or it's not done, or there's a bug, or, you know, something weird happened and that gunshot wasn't supposed to go off, or, you know, somebody was supposed to react and they didn't. And so we were, like, doing a lot of back and forth with the writer and saying, like, okay, we get that this is what would happen, but how can we kind of bring it to the player's attention in a way that doesn't kind of lose the authenticity of the event, right? And doesn't kind of Hollywoodify it, right? Like, how do we make this something that the player can understand? And he ended up saying, like, hey, well, we could have the little sister talk about it as kind of like a, she's frustrated. She's not scared, because even at a young age, she's not going to be afraid of this anymore. She's experienced enough of it, but she would be upset by it, right? She hasn't become so jaded that she thinks this is just a normal thing. She's going to be upset by it. And so we could have that discussion through her and have her bring it up and have everyone discuss it. And hopefully that's a way that maintains the authenticity and the realism of the situation, but allows us to kind of have that discussion with the player.
Yeah, I think also the fact that you guys offer dialogue options around sort of like whether your friend would walk home or if they would stay. Yeah. So like, I know those are conversations that I've directly had with people after, you know, because I did grow up in a neighborhood where you did hear them. And I remember the first thing was if like somebody was like over, was like, yo, are you good going back home? You want to ride? You want to chill? So yeah, I thought that that was a very effective scene. And I do love the fact that you guys didn't sort of Hollywoodify it. Like it didn't like become this whole like slow motion thing or, or, you know, or like some really dramatic music. Like, yeah, I think you guys really nailed that. Now, as a designer, Cindy, how do you approach a scene like that? You know, when it might be something, you know, that, well, like, I don't know if it's something that you've experienced in like your life, but if it's not, you know, how do you approach that from a design perspective?
Yeah, so like with that, with like the one Michael just gave example of, it was like with most of the, I think, the plots in the game and stuff that we've kind of designed around, it's been like, hey, you know, like Tony, like how would this normally go down, and try to get like a very accurate picture of what that would be and like how people would respond and all the events that might go into it. And then being like, what can we do to, like, what's the point? What, having this event in the game, what's the point of having it? And usually there's like a, hey, so we want to communicate to the player, like in the gunshot at dinner. It's like that there are things that happen even when you feel like you're in a safe place. So you're at home with your family. We wanted to you know, showcase that, like, there were these events that a danger is kind of present even when you're like, you want to be at home and safe. So we kind of like get to the more the root of what do we want to try to make the player feel, and work with people who are experts in that area to give an accurate portrayal, but also get across to the player what we need. So like we want them to feel like something happened and this wasn't right, but it's also normal, but it's not your normal because you're the player and you probably haven't grown up with that experience. But we want you to feel like this is a problem and that people know it's a problem and, you know, talk about it that way. So it's a lot of going back and forth with the experts, like with Tony or with Tisdale and stuff like that, and being like, hey, so like, what do you think about this? And it's cool because Tony isn't much of a gamer, so we get a really like outside view of, you know, games from him. And then Tisdale, Michael Tisdale is a gamer and has like a really good grasp on games and does like, you know, role-playing games and like pen and paper games and stuff like that. And so he has like some really good ideas on how to like take some of this and translate it into a game. So like kind of using all of the resources we have has really helped and is probably the best way. There's never like one solution to be like, hey, how do you make this part of the game? So it's like, hey, so we can take these bits from here and we can maybe do some sort of like something with a mini game here. And like, how do we get over these hurdles of like, you know, how do we give the player the information they need?
Yeah.
That was really, really good question, Sharif, because I had not thought about the design perspective at all.
Yeah, got to take advantage of the expertise that we have on the phone, right?
Yeah.
No, I love hearing about. Yeah, I love hearing about like what goes into these games that we love. Like I love hearing about it.
Oh, I know. I'm such a nerd. I went to all these AI technical talks at GDC, and I was like, a lot of this is going over my head, but it's really fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the best. You learn the most when you're just like jumping in the deep end and see if you can figure it all out, you know?
Yeah, I learned a lot more about AI than I ever thought I knew. So. but speaking about learning, and this was originally Sharif's kind of audience question before I got him to come in and co-host with me, and he was gracious enough to accept. And I want to turn it on its head a little bit.
Okay.
Because, you know, as Cindy mentioned, the people playing your game are probably not going to be people who've experienced life on the South Side or life in an environment like Inglewood or other areas. I mean, I grew up on the South Side, but I did not grow up in Inglewood.
Right.
So even for someone like me who is Black on the South, from the South Side, I don't live on the South Side anymore, I may not have had that same experience growing up, so it's not a one-and-done situation. I can't go, oh yeah, this is what I grew up with, I understand everything, I don't need to play the game.
Yeah.
So knowing that, what is it you want both white audiences who may come to this game because either they're curious about it, they want to see, you know, what it is they think they know, don't know, what is it you want to convey about Chicago and Black culture from this game, and conversely, kind of for non-Black POC or even Black people who, like me, grew up on the South Side but not with this experience, and this could very well be a "this is not my lane" question, but, you know, it's you are telling a story, you are having this narrative and putting it out there as to members not of the in-group you're making a game about.
Right. So there's a couple of answers to this question, because I think there's a couple of questions in there.
But yeah. There were two. So it's basically like, what do you want white folks to take away from this game?
Yeah.
And everyone else.
Right. So I think... did you want to...
Sure. I guess one thing that has been forefront in my mind is that, like, people have a tendency to associate, like, the other with a group of people, being like, oh, they're not like me. Like, I can't really identify with them. Like, they are the other. And it's something in psychology people talk about and stuff like that. And I think that We Are Chicago, one of the things I really want people to take away is that, like, you know, to take these, you know, people who live in these situations and not categorize them as other than me, but be like, they are like me. They're both humans. They have dreams. They have goals. They have thoughts. They have challenges in their life. Like, and kind of make them more human and make them a lot more relatable. So you can be like, oh, they're not the other. They're these kinds of people, and they deserve help or, you know, opportunities or, like, to be treated as human beings and maybe, you know, help some of the situations that are going on right now in America, not even just Chicago, but, you know, everywhere about this sort of thing, is like to take away that mask, that otherness from people.
Yeah, I mean, I think empathy building is the big focus of the game, like, across all the demographics, right? But I think one thing that we were not expecting was, as we were working with some of the nonprofit groups, they were saying, hey, you know, this could be a really great thing to try to reach kids in these neighborhoods who are dealing with, you know, should I choose to join a gang? Should I choose to get a gun? Should I choose to, you know, be involved in some of these things, right? To kind of be able to step back and play out those choices in a virtual experience where you're not actually having to pay the consequences of those choices, right? But in a way that's realistic. So the consequences are real. They're not, you know, GTA style where you just respawn and you still have, you know, tons of money and guns and cars, right? Like, in a realistic setting, if I made these choices, what would happen?
Or right? In our case, with We Are Chicago, a lot of this stuff happens to your friends. So, right. Like, what happens in the story to the people who make these choices? So, like, in We Are Chicago, we do not allow you to join a gang,
right,
and, you know, do some of the stuff, but people around you do, so that you can see the results of their choices as well.
Yeah, and so I think that's an angle that we were not expecting, but when people were talking to us about it, it made a lot of sense, and I think it's something that does actually fit really well with the game. So it's definitely, you know, not just for people who don't know anything about this experience, but I think for them, the point to the game was that we felt, you know, that we were pretty well educated and that we knew some stuff about the world, and that we live in Chicago and we were, you know, maybe 5 miles away from some of these neighborhoods. And at the end of the day, we really knew very little about what was actually happening in these places on a day-to-day basis, because the news and the media portrayals are incredibly skewed, right? And the things that you hear coming out of it are usually, like, gun death statistics or terrible stories or, you know, things about people joining gangs and selling drugs and all this,
children.
Right? Or children. Yeah, like, oh my God. So, yeah, so I think the whole thing comes down to if we can kind of paint a more nuanced picture and talk about the things that you see in the news in a different context, right? So people are getting shot. Why are they getting shot? Why are people deciding to join gangs, right? If you're someone who's never lived in this experience and you're thinking, like, well, why would I join a gang? Why wouldn't I just go get a job? Or why wouldn't I just go finish school and go to college, right? But then if you are put in that position where you're saying, like, okay, well, in this neighborhood, you have huge amounts of people who are unemployed and you have no access to good jobs and you have no access to good food and you have no access to good schools, right? The choices are now completely different than what you expected them to be if you weren't from that neighborhood. So hopefully playing through that and being presented with realistic choices, but a limited set of choices, gives you the insight to say, oh, okay, this is why people are choosing these things that to me seem nonsensical. Like, why would somebody choose to join a gang? Well, maybe they're actually afraid and they need protection, or they're unable to get a regular job, and so they're choosing to do it to earn money. doesn't necessarily make that a great choice still, but it does kind of contextualize it and hopefully give people a different perspective so they don't just immediately dismiss people who choose to do those things, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point on the marketing and like sort of like how, you know, a lot of news that comes out of Chicago does tend to be on the negative side.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that there's also a wonder that, or a worry that this game, which like hopefully will get a lot of, you know, mainstream coverage and be very popular, will also fall either in the completely negative part or the, hey, this is a one of the rare positive things. And, you know, I would guess that, you know, you're probably telling a more nuanced story than that, than like probably has, you know, some positive things and negative things that like happen in it. Like it's not sort of a one note thing.
Right.
Are you concerned that the game will sort of like foster the idea that like, you know, like the South and West sides are just too dangerous to be in and like, you know, and like this is like a hell,
right,
all that kind of stuff? And like, how is sort of like the wording that you're using in things like the press kit and the marketing, how does it help to sort of counteract that Chicago kind of narrative that we hear a lot about?
Yeah, I mean, again, like what I was saying earlier, we've kind of been, you know, trying to walk that fine line between, you know, making the game sound interesting, which unfortunately in our culture right now is, if it's violent, it's interesting, right? Is kind of the situation that we're in right now. Like a lot of like Hollywood stuff has kind of set this tone, and a lot of video games are kind of following that trend as well. And so it's been very difficult to kind of gauge what is the right level of kind of dramatic sort of storytelling buildup that we need, retaining that accuracy and realism and not trying to paint things in a negative light. So yeah, it's a difficult challenge, but I think we're trying to, you know, show that, hey, there is more than just the numbers, more than just the statistics, and we want to talk about these issues that are very difficult to talk about and very politically charged, like things around gun violence and things around gangs and drugs and things like that. So we're going to be talking about some negative things in the game, and that I think is necessary to talk about the issues that are happening. And because if we didn't talk about them, it wouldn't be a realistic or accurate portrayal, right? But at the same time, making sure that the way that we're talking about it is realistic, right? Everybody on the South Side is not doing drugs and driving around, you know, shooting people. So we shouldn't be presenting it that way. And I think we've tried to do drama through more location in specific ways, right? So if you look at a lot of the language in our press kit, the story elements about your friend disappearing and you having to kind of figure out what's happening and who your friends are and all that is something that could happen in any neighborhood, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the South Side of Chicago. We think that is general enough that it's not, you know, like, oh, look at this terrible place, right? But the kind of reasons that those things are happening do kind of draw back to those negative events happening in the neighborhood, but hopefully not in a way that's, you know, stereotyping it. And again, because we're trying to present the characters' choices in this context and to try to explain why they're making those choices, hopefully that kind of erodes some of those stereotypes and erodes some of those ideas about, you know, oh, everyone in this neighborhood is just terrible because otherwise, you know, why would there be a gang there? Why would there be these homicide numbers, right? Like, if you portray it with the context, I think that helps quite a lot. And I think that's one of the big things that, you know, Hollywood productions and even big AAA video games are missing in a lot of situations, is just presenting it in that context.
So long story short, we are very concerned.
Yes.
She tried to like make sure that we're presenting it in the right way.
Yeah.
It makes me happy. You know, I can't speak for Sharif. I'm hoping it makes you happy as well. That is a concern, because it would be far too easy to profit off, you know, the current climate, as it were.
Yeah.
And go, well, we're just telling a story. Look at the news. You can't say that it's not true.
Right.
And it makes me very glad and eases a lot of concerns I had as a native Chicagoan, as someone who grew up on the South Side and who loves games and does this work about diversity, that you are concerned about these issues. You are concerned about how the game is going to be received, and that you've done the work and brought in members of the community.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I mentioned in the talk was that I'm hoping that more people do kind of challenges on this stuff, right? Because that's what I want. You know, it might be difficult for me to, you know, speak on this stuff and to hopefully answer things in the way that, you know, I hope this is proving to you that we're doing this right. But at the end of the day, I want people to be challenging us because I want everyone to be challenged, right? If they're making a game and they're depicting a person of color, I want that depiction to be challenged so that it's a good depiction and so that the media kind of is better for it, right? And that's the goal, is we want the game to be good, we want it to be well representative, we want it to be accurate, and we want it to improve things. If we get this game out and it's not improving things and we're doing something negative, that's not what I wanted to do when I set out to make the game, right? So the more people challenge us, the more we can feel like we're doing a good job if we're able to respond to those challenges, right? And if we can make sure that the game that we're presenting is reflecting that feedback that we're getting. I think it's super important, and I think more people should challenge creative people to do a better job with their representations, because I think it'll just make the industry better, it'll make the medium better, and it'll make games more like interesting and more fun to play for a wider audience. So yeah.
Exactly. Sharif, did you have anything to add?
Nothing right there. Well stated.
All right. And so, you know, We Are Chicago is coming to a close. It looks like you're pretty close to being done with the game. And of course, there's all the follow-up in the press.
Yeah.
But after working so long on this game, is there something that's next in the pipeline? You're going to take a little bit of a break? What's going on for the studio post We Are Chicago life?
I think one of the biggest challenges is after working on this game for about 3 years now, I've had a lot of game ideas in the last 3 years that I haven't really been able to act on, because I'm always like, oh, I can prototype a little bit, and then I just get sucked back into We Are Chicago stuff, and, you know, the majority of all my time is spent on We Are Chicago because we're trying to get it done. So definitely want to try some of the things. Probably something a lot smaller in scope. Maybe a year of development, not three and a half years.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think as we've been talking to people, and especially some people that came up to me after my talk at GDC, like, there's a lot of people interested in this type of game, and there's a lot of other stories to tell. I mean, like, our story is very specifically about, you know, people who are Black, and there's very different stories to be told about the Hispanic communities in Chicago. And so even in Chicago, there's like a million more stories to tell. And it would be great to work on more of those. It kind of depends on how the game does, right? If the gaming audience is really interested in this, which we hope they are, then that could be a good sign that we could work on more of these, and it would be a good thing to continue to do. But if not, then we have to figure out, you know, what is a thing that fits well with games, that people are really interested in playing, that can kind of have the same effect and kind of have a positive impact on the world.
I think that's what Culture Shock Games' kind of mission statement is, and kind of reflects that in the company titles, that you want to make games that will help people in some way. And We Are Chicago is giving people an idea of someone else's life. Another way could be, like, you know, a fun game that also can teach you something, more gamey of a game, maybe, because, you know, We Are Chicago is a bit more of an interactive narrative.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, I think we want to be in this field of, like, making games that make the world a better place. But we want to do it in a way that makes sense. Like, if everybody says, like, oh, it's just a PSA game or, you know, like something like that, like, we don't want to be like a PSA. So we want to be something that people find engaging and interesting and exciting and still authentic and accurate at the same time. So if we need to change up our ideas a little bit to make that happen, then that's something that we're open to doing.
Yeah.
It'll
be exciting.
Yeah.
What we do next.
Yeah.
And even though this episode will air after you show your game at the Chicago Video Game Law Summit, I was wondering, how can people get their hands on the game, either now or will it be in early access soon? Like, kind of when can people get their hands on the game and give you feedback? Or do you have a way for folks to possibly stream it or even just, you know, review copies, things like that? Because I'm sure that people will be interested in more of the game once they've heard this episode and hopefully see the game at the Video Game Law Summit this weekend.
Yeah. So Video Game Law Summit is the next place. And then we're actually going to be at PAX East in Boston. So if you're going to PAX East, you can play the game there. We're going to have demo stations set up. Beyond that, if you're press and you're looking for review copies, we have a press kit that you can request copies through. You can email us. We also have like a mailing list that we're going to be sending out stuff about when the release date is, because we haven't actually finalized the release date yet. So once that actually happens, we'll be sending that out to everyone on our mailing list. So you can go to our website, which is wearechicagogame.com, and sign up for the mailing list there to kind of keep up to date.
And also access our press kit.
And that's also where our press kit is, yeah. Yeah, we're not planning on doing an early access game because we kind of want to have a finished, polished version of the game for everybody to play. But we're hoping to have it out soon. There's a lot of fun stuff that we're working on, so we're hoping that it happens soon. But it's just trying to find a good release date to kind of give it the best chance of having a good launch, because there's a lot of big conferences coming up and E3 and big game launches, so we don't want to kind of get lost with all the big press that they're going to be getting. So yeah, it's just a matter of finding a good date to make sure that the game is well received and everybody gets to see it. So
great. That's awesome. So I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah.
And at PAX East.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's funny, I get to see people in Chicago more at other events than actually in Chicago.
Yeah. We should hold some conferences here or something and get some.
We should. Hopefully, yeah. ValorCon will announce some dates soon and we can try to get y'all there to talk about the game. So what we do to kind of wind down the show is have listener questions, then talk about what we're playing. And so our usual friend of the show, Tim, has sent in a couple questions. And Sharif, since you are our guest co-host this week, would you like to kick off the round of listener questions?
I will kick off the question. Shout out to Tim. So his first question is, how important is visual accuracy in creating We Are Chicago? So the graphic fidelity, the visuals, sort of the real, making sure that it actually looks like the city. Like how important were those things in the development of the game?
Very important. There's been some games that have come out recently that were like, hey, look, it's Chicago. And then a lot of people from Chicago may have played the said game. And like, why are there hills in Chicago? And why are all these things here that this isn't Chicago? So, we really wanted to make it accurate to the neighborhood that we were targeting, but we also didn't want to make it too accurate. So we didn't actually pick a crossroads or a series of crossroads to build out in the game. We didn't want to be like, oh, hey, look at this block at this place. Here you go. Look how accurate it is. There's people houses. They have their own lives. They don't want to be attached to a game. And, there wasn't any specifics we wanted to, like, from the people we interviewed that we wanted to say, hey, look, it's right here, or like these things happened here, or the player lives here. So we kind of were able to use like Michael Tisdale's expertise in the 3D modeling and neighborhoods and the area he lived in to create a very realistic Chicago-looking street, but also not necessarily have to be like, oh my gosh, look, it's 100% perfect down to this stop sign and that fire hydrant. So while it's very important for us to make it feel like Chicago, we also had a little bit of leeway to make it not feel like it had to be
one specific location,
yeah. But it's something we've been striving to, and we were continually working on still with environmental art, is to make it feel as good as possible and as accurate.
Yeah, and another reason why we didn't want to necessarily choose a specific like crossroads or even a specific neighborhood is that the people that we interviewed were from different neighborhoods on the south side, and so we didn't feel like it was right to say that this is like a specific experience from a specific neighborhood. These were shared experiences that lots of people talked about from different parts of the south side and
not
the west
only
side.
In Englewood and stuff.
Yeah, and so saying like, oh, this is something that happens in Englewood is another way that people can kind of say like, oh, well, this is just what happened in this one spot, right? If we make it a little bit more abstract and say, hey, this is stuff that's happening on the south side, that gives people a little bit less ability to just say like, oh, it's this one neighborhood that's a problem, and to say like, oh, hey, this stuff is happening all over the place, we need to have a discussion about it.
And going with like a more realistic art style was one of the first things we were talking about as far as the game, because we wanted it to feel like it was real. Like, we didn't want to have like a cartoony style or like an artistic style. We wanted it to feel as real as possible, because we felt like people might have the strongest ties to like empathize with the people in it if they seemed as real as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, I definitely hear what you're saying about sort of not wanting to lock yourself down to a location, but don't be surprised if people are scrutinizing, you know, what area of Chicago is this? What block is this? Yeah. But, you know, like, because Chicago's in the name, you know, so like people will be doing that, you know?
Well, we've gotten some really good feedback, especially from people in the conventions being like, oh, this feels like outside my house. This feels like, you know, where my friend lives. And we take that as like really good feedback. So we're hopefully getting there, and, you know, we're always up for getting feedback from people as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I hope somebody's trying to figure out what street that is. That sounds awesome. That's like greatest compliment to us as developers, that they're like super excited about the game. And yeah, that would be awesome. But
they might not find it, though.
The secret is they might not find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a hard thing because you have an elementary school and a high school and a park and your house all on the same like 6-block area.
Yeah. So, we kind of condense some things down to make it all a little bit easier to make. But yeah.
We didn't want the player having to walk 15 minutes to get to their work or to their school. So
yeah, as long as it's not as bad as Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
It's compressed, not fantasy, though.
Right.
Well, then, speaking of fantasy, Tim's other question was, after working on this project, what elements do you consider most important for communicating a setting?
Yeah, so a lot of the stuff that we were kind of originally expecting it to be was very visual stuff. I think one of the big surprises was like how much audio has kind of added to it, right? I mean, audio in general usually adds a lot to the game, but kind of making the audio very authentic to Chicago sounds was a huge deal, and it there's been a couple of times now where I've been like playing the game with headphones on, and I'll like hear like an ambient noise of like a siren going off in the background and being like, wait, was that outside or was that in the game? I just totally I have no idea anymore. So I think that adds a lot to kind of feeling like you're immersed in the experience and feeling like you're actually in that setting. But I think a lot of it just came down to kind of doing a lot of research and talking to people about what some of these areas looked like. And like, for instance, in the place that the player works, he works in like a fast food kind of restaurant. And there's bulletproof glass and a wall and stuff that you take the orders through. And then there's an exchange door that you kind of pass the food through to get to the customer. And that was something that is not from my personal experience, and I would have never thought to put it in, but as we're doing research and talking to people, they're like, yeah, that's how everything is. You kind of do this exchange through a bulletproof glass thing. And so that, I think, says a whole lot about the state of that restaurant and the location that it's in, without us saying anything in the dialogue, right? That just communicates a ton to the player about what's happening and the situation that they find themselves in. So a lot of those kind of details really helped to communicate without even saying anything what we wanted to say, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not saying wow because I'm not familiar with that. I'm saying wow because it's just, like, I still get surprised by some things that I realize are, like, revelations to people.
Yeah.
Because to me, I'm just like, yeah.
right.
I mean, like, if you're going to get Chinese food or you're going to certain drive-thrus, like, yeah, it's like literally a bulletproof glass and you're speaking through a little thing and you're passing your car through the little swivel, you know, window.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, I can probably name about 2 or 3 Harold's Chicken locations that have that exact setup right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's been a big thing that kind of came out of this project was, like, we've personally learned a whole lot making the game about just the differences between the life experiences in you know, over a 5-mile radius, right? You know, like, we didn't grow up in Chicago, but, like, had we grown up in, you know, Lincoln Park or Lakeview or something like that, we would have been living, you know, 5 miles away from some of these neighborhoods on the south and west side, and the experiences are just so vastly different and in so many really hard to describe ways, right, that are very difficult to explain to someone, and so trying to figure out how to explain that to someone has been a really interesting challenge. But I think it's super important because this is the stuff that people should know about and should be informed about, but typically are not going to be because that's not stuff that people talk about a lot in media. So it's been interesting. We've had a lot of, like, oh, interesting moments, you know, like, oh, I didn't realize. Oh, okay. Got it now. Interesting. Yeah. So it's It's been a good experience, I think, for us to be able to learn all that, but then hopefully we're able to communicate that well in the game as well. So
okay, now I do have the critical question of the night, and I hope that this question is somehow cleverly placed in your game. deep dish pizza or thin crust pizza?
Are you going to answer first?
I don't know. Do we have the same answer?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we have the same answer.
You sure?
Oh, maybe not.
We have a split here.
Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, I was gonna say deep dish.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I was gonna say deep dish.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
No, we're good. Deep dish.
No contention. Yeah,
we're good.
I was like, there could be tension on the show. We could have our jersey.
Yeah. No, no.
Didn't you see all that thin crust pizza stuff I slipped into the game? What? No. Deep dish is the way to go.
Yeah.
So. Wow. Man, I was hoping we'd have like a drama-filled moment about pizza. Oh, well. Well, you know, we all love to play games, whether or not we're making them, critiquing them, talking about them, or just playing them. And our final segment is talking about what we've been playing recently. And, you know, you are our guests, so either of you go first, flip a coin, arm wrestle, thumb wrestle, about what you've been playing recently and, you know, and how you're feeling about it.
Okay. Well, I got the signal that I'm going first, so... Yeah, so the most recent thing I've been playing is 1979 Revolution, which is a narrative-driven game about the Iranian Revolution, which is fascinating, and they're very high intensity, lots of drama and quick action and stuff like that. But if you've ever played any of the Telltale games or anything of that nature, it's very similar in the mechanics, and it's been awesome. I really liked it. I don't know. I've been playing that and Firewatch and That Dragon Cancer and Life is Strange, all kind of in a similar vein. But yeah, I mean, they're all really great games. I loved all of them. So.
Yeah, those are pretty heavy games, though. You must be like an emotional wreck after you finish.
Generally, I think, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no, they're pretty intense, but I mean, I guess this is kind of spaced out too. I don't get as much of a chance to play because, like Cindy said, we're pretty long hours on this project. So every chance I get, I do a little bit of a narrative game and kind of get my emotions going, and then I'm good for like a week or so.
Wow. So Cindy, what have you been playing when you have some time?
Well, I was one of the backers on the 1979 Revolution game, so I recently got my awesome backer code. I'm still working through it. I haven't beat it yet, finished it, I guess, is a better term for this game that Michael has, but still working on that one. I recently got like a Steam sale. I purchased Divinity Original Sin, like a top-down RPG thing. I loaded it up, and we played the tutorial.
Yeah, they have co-op.
They have a couch co-op in the most recent version, and since there's not too many of those games, try to get to play a little bit of that. And it was pretty good. I like the combat, and you run around and search for stuff. Thing I think that bugs me the most with the controllers, I think we stopped pretty quick because I'm kind of more of a mouse and keyboard person, but
yeah,
it was really good. And then I played Firewatch, of course. And then like there's this game called Banish that I play, and it's just like a town building game, and it's really addicting and wonderful because like you can like build this little city, and then people will come to me like, hey, we're nomadic and we need a place to live, will you take us in? And I'm always like, yes, come to my utopia in the woods, we have all the venison you can ever want and berries and stuff, come live here. And it's, I don't know, it's really addicting and great. And then over the weekend I was hanging out with my little sister, and we just played Star Fox 64 for like a good, I don't even know how many hours straight.
Nice.
She didn't have any internet, so we were like, what can we play? Well, you have an N64, let's play some Star Fox. So
nice.
That was a nice nostalgia.
Now when you say younger sister, like was she like around when Star Fox 64 like originally came out?
I'm going to be terrible and be like, I don't really remember when Star Fox 64 came out.
I think it came out in 97, 98, I would say, around that time.
Okay. Yeah. She was alive. I don't think she was necessarily playing those kinds of games. I don't know if my mom and dad would have let her at that age.
Okay. Well, I will save from embarrassing myself because I know most lines in Star Fox.
Yeah.
And I do quite a good General Pepper, I'd say. But
Yeah.
I love that game. I've bought it in every possible way that it's come out, and I can't wait for the Star Fox Zero.
And you must know every secret then, right?
So, yeah, I'm a big fan, so I'm glad to see it.
We were really confused how you do different paths and stuff, and we were like, oh, wait, we kind of remember this. There was secret stuff, right? And we're like, oops, we missed all the secret stuff.
Yeah, I kind of know them because I play it probably once a year. Like, I love that
nice,
game.
Nice.
I love that game. It's a great
game. Yeah, it's great. Like, you play it and you're like, oh, huh, they're so blocky. The graphics are so bad. But you play it and you're like, oh, wow, this is still pretty good. And, like, it's nice.
Yep.
Nice. So, Sharif is my awesome guest co-host. What have you been playing?
So this past weekend, I played through Quantum Break. Unfortunately, I played it on PC, which means it was a bit quantum broken, rimshot. Yeah, this game was not a good Windows version. It got a lot of flack for being like one of the flagship kind of Windows 10, like the universal Windows platform, like the UWP games, which mean that you can't really configure anything or really change up anything with INI files or anything. It's literally just a Windows 10 app that's kind of a black box. So any issues with it, you kind of just have to wait for Remedy, the developer, or Microsoft to change it. And, I don't have a super high gaming PC, but like I have like a medium high one, I would say. And I had to drop the settings down on this game like I've never had to drop them down on a game before outside of like Arkham Knight, which was a complete train wreck on a PC as well.
Yeah.
So the technical problems are really bad. If you're willing to get through those, including a lot of driver crashes, I found the story to be pretty fascinating and the mocap and the acting to be really well done.
Nice.
And they also have a TV show as well.
Yeah.
So after you play through like an act, which like probably takes about an hour or so, you like watch like a 20-minute episode of like a live action kind of TV show with like a Lance Reddick and like these other actors. And yeah, it's really well done. So I hear on the Xbox One that it runs fine, but if you're getting it on a PC, I would probably say to wait until they patch it because it's in really bad shape. Also been playing a lot of The Division. That game is kind of my crack. I've never really been into these loot-based games before. Like, I never played a lot of, like, Diablo or Borderlands or, like, anything. But between Destiny and The Division, I really found, like, sort of a love for these, like, loot-based kind of first and third-person kind of shooters. So they just released a big update on the 12th of April. So I've been playing through that. Really great depiction of New York. I kind of grew up in the New York area, so like it was like really, 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 really well done, and like I recognized like a lot of like places and things like that.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'm really, really enjoying that game a lot. I've also been enjoying Enter the Gungeon, which is a indie kind of like roguelike game that came out, I don't know, maybe a few weeks ago. It's actually selling quite well.
Yeah, they've been like front page on Steam for a little while now.
Yeah. And I actually heard it from my co-host on the Spawn on Me podcast, Khalif Adams. He has it on the PS4.
Oh, cool.
And he loves it because I didn't even know that there was like a PC version, and then I went and saw it, and I was like, cool. And yeah, it's a really, really well done kind of roguelike game where you're upgrading your weapons and it's basically one hit death and like that kind of thing. But really good music. I'm really into game music, so like I really enjoyed the music in that game. It has a nice kind of sense of humor to it. Doesn't take itself too seriously. Yeah, it's just a fun little arcade, just like shoot the things that pop up and gather health. I mean, that's pretty much it. And the final game that like I've been playing is Twilight Princess HD on the Wii U. So I'm a big Zelda fan. Twilight Princess was probably my definitely my least favorite of the 3D Zeldas, which I doesn't mean it's bad, because I think Zelda is arguably like one of the greatest game series of all time. So it's not a bad game. It was like just like my least favorite, especially with it being a Wii launch title. I found myself playing much more of like Wii Sports and like the other games at the time. But kind of going back to it now, I think I have a better appreciation of the dungeon design, of like kind of the weirdness of the enemies, like the darkness of it. They really did take the formula and like really did kind of stretch it more than I remember. So yeah, I would definitely recommend if you have a Wii U to revisit it, because I think, you know, it's a much better game than I remember. Dale doesn't eclipse any of the other 3D ones, but it's pretty good. So that's my list.
Awesome.
Oh, that's a nice varied list, Sharif.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got to keep it diverse, you know.
Rim shot. Let's see. I, too, have been playing The Division, although probably not as much as Sharif, because I'm still a lowly level 12 character. But I'm enjoying it a lot more than I expected to, because I have not touched a Clancy book in I don't want to say how many years. So I wasn't sold on it, but then they had the open beta, and I liked it. I liked it more than Destiny. So picked it up, actually, while we were all at GDC, and started playing once I got home, and I'm really, really enjoying it, either solo or with friends. One thing, and this actually came up in our conversation with last week's guest, Mel Fleming, the way that the enemy NPCs are dressed is problematic for me. Because the way they're dressed, they're in hoodies, they're coded by their clothing as urban and thuggish, even though they're bundled to the point where you can't really tell someone's race.
Yep, and they hold their guns sideways, and they have baggy jeans and all that kind of stuff.
And see, I've never touched a gun. I'm actually terrified of guns. So part of me is always like, that just seems like a really bad way to hold a gun. Like, you're trying to get a broken wrist. I don't know gun anything, so I don't know if that's accurate. But that is my one kind of gripe with it right now. And there was a cartoon going around about the looters and basically how you're running up and shooting people. And that I disagreed with, because enemy NPCs will engage you first. You're not just running up on them, shooting them, and looting randomly. Yeah, but the way your enemy NPCs, and I've seen people playing at level 30, 40 on stream, and these characters are still in like baggy jeans and hoodies. I want to know what kind of hoodies they have, because it takes several shots to kill even. Yeah, I'm just like, do you have Kevlar in your hoodie? What is it made of? Because I need this. If you can take like point blank shots and not go down for several bullets.
Yeah, that is one complaint that I have about the game, is that, you know, they have enemy types in the game that have more armor and stuff, but for the higher levels, they don't replace the normal enemies with those armored enemies. They just take the same hoodie guys and just make them take like 300 bullets, which is kind of weird.
Right. I was like, I guess you graduated in the hierarchy of the villains. I don't know, but... But yeah, that would be my one complaint. Although gameplay-wise, it's totally solid. I love it. You know, I don't get motion sick from it. I'm still playing Street Fighter V. I need to either give up the game or... Not give up the game, but I wish that... I felt like I had a complete game. I still don't feel like it's totally a complete game. And there are parts of it that are unbalanced. There's some characters, like we got Alex finally as kind of a sorry we screwed up the launch of the game character. And he's totally OP in terms of everyone I've fought who's using Alex is just like two hits and I'm down. So the game needs balance, especially if it's, you know, going to be an FGC circuit game. Because there are some people, like, they get Zangief or M. Bison and it's over. Like, there's no way to block a lot of their hits. But let me not get into fighting game strategy, because we'll be here all night. I'm a big nerd for Resident Evil, although I'm kind of a scaredy cat, but I got Resident Evil 6 again on the PS4, and I've been playing it through as Leon. And it's fun. I still have my Xbox 360 copy, and it's fun to go back and revisit the zombie days of Umbrella Corporation. And today, I actually got to play and stream Man of War Corsica, which is a ship combat game set in the Warhammer universe. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, it's pre-early access. Early access opens on Friday. So by the time you all are listening to the end of this podcast, you can get on early access Steam. But, you know, there's ships that attack you. You get to upgrade your ship. You get to hire a crew. Giant beasts attack you. No, I got chased from the spawn point of this beast back to one of my missions. And it still was attacking me, so I died. Or, like, the ship just went down. Like, yeah, it was just like suddenly waters over my poor little captain's head. But it was great fun, and normally I'm not real big into combat games like that, like the ship combat. Like, I'm terrible at Assassin's Creed 4, the ship combat in there. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm glad I tried it, and I'm definitely looking forward to where they go with it. So if you get a chance to get an early access copy, definitely grab it. And I, you know, if people want, I can tweet them the link to the Twitch archive or the YouTube. And that's that, because after next week, I won't be getting a lot of gaming in because I'll be traveling, so.
Yeah, well, I'm going to add Star Fox to my list because now I've been reminded of it from somebody. I'll probably be playing that tonight, actually.
So when you record Spawn on me, be like, what you been playing, Star Fox? Have you slept? No.
We need to help Star Fox.
You know? Nice.
I need it. Got to do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to stop talking because we're having such an awesome time, but it is that time of the show to kind of wrap it up. So, Cindy and Michael, thank you so, so much for coming and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, anytime. And Sharif, thank you so much for hopping in the co-host seat with me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a great time. Thank you for hosting.
Oh, no problem. You know, you always got a spot with us as a co-host or as a guest if you would like.
Sweet. Awesome.
I'll come back and be like, "What? Why is my name not on the podcast?" Oh, Sharif just took it over.
Yeah, I'm just going to drop in like in the middle of shows. Hey!
You'll be like that dude that's like, that has a little too much to drink at family parties. Which I shouldn't joke about too much, because I'm sure that's a problem a lot of people have that is not funny. So I apologize for such... Yeah. I mean, I have a small family. I didn't have to deal with that too much. But still, it wasn't that funny. I apologize, y'all. So for folks who want to keep up with the game or with you, let them know where they can find y'all on Twitter or the internets at large.
Yeah, so the game, you can go to our website. It's wearechicagogame.com. And we have a Twitter account, which is we, with the letter R, Chicago Game, at wearechicagogame. My personal Twitter is at MikaMikam, so it's MikaMikeem.
Okay.
And my Twitter is PiggleButts. It's PiggleButts.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. And that's probably the places we go the most often. So it's probably the best places to get in touch with us. If you need to get in touch with us for like press copies or anything like that, you can also just email michael@wearechicagogame.com and I will get that as well.
Awesome. And then is your GDC talk available online yet, or is it still just in the vault?
Is it?
It's definitely on the vault.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't. I honestly have not checked. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not sure. I thought somebody was saying that the Indie Game Summit ones are free.
Yeah.
They were saying it at GDC, though, so I don't know if that's like a time delay thing, like they're going to be free, or if they're all free right away. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So for those of you listening, if it's available already via the GDC Vault, we'll have a link in the show notes. Otherwise, as soon as we can tweet that out to you all, we will happily share Michael's GDC talk. Sharif, where can people find you?
So you can find me at a number of wonderful places. On Twitter, at Sharif Jackson, S-H-A-R-E-E-F Jackson. Or you can find me at Operation Cube, which is for my podcast, Operation Cubicle, where we talk about work-life balance from a Black geeky perspective. And I also co-host the Spawn on Me podcast with... Cully Fadoms and Cicero Holmes, where we talk about video games from the perspective of gamers of color. And that Twitter account is at Spawn on Me. I'm on Twitch at twitch.tv/ReefJackson. And my YouTube is Sharif Jackson. That's where you'll find my Gaming Looks Good videos, where I cover one game from the lens of race, gender, and sexuality. And all that stuff is at sharifjackson.com, which is sort of the home base for all the websites, all the Twitter accounts, Gaming Looks Good, Operation Cubicle, all that stuff is all at sharifjackson.com. Check it out.
Okay, cool. And y'all know where to find me. I'm at Cipher of Tyr just about everywhere. So, you know, cipheroftyr.com, twitch.tv, Cipher of Tyr. And for the podcast, it is Out of Tokens Cast. And David, who will be back next week when we talk to Eve Eschenbacher, is at Red Conversation for Twitter. And his website is davidlreeves.com. So signing off for episode 44, this is Tanya.
This is Sharif.
And this is Michael.
This is Cindy.
And with that, we will see you in a week with episode 45 of the show.